I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. Would you like to learn how you can generate more leads without struggling to deliver your services to the clients you already have? What if you were taught how to step out of your comfort zone to leverage tools like podcasts, social media, and video in order to constantly bring in leads, sales, and keep your pipeline full? And what if you knew how to hire the right talent that'll help you scale your business and create greater value without being so hands-on? Join our free Smashing the Plateau community, where listeners and guests of Smashing the Plateau connect, collaborate, and learn how to smash the plateau in business, work, and in life. To join, go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook. That's www.smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Maureen Rukin-Bales. Maureen founded Creative Restaurant Solutions in 1997 and Combined Resource Solutions in 2006. Recognized as a dynamic consultant and leader, Maureen has built a team of 25 experts and partners who consistently deliver results with their knowledge, creative approaches, and dedication to superior customer service. Before starting CRS, Maureen acquired 15 years of deep and diverse experience in management, training, and program implementation. Through her experience as both a business owner and leader, Maureen coaches leaders in organizations that want to grow, streamline their operations, and maximize profitability through productivity of their teams. Maureen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. I'm happy to be here.
So you've had an illustrious career, and I wondered if we could start off by talking a little bit about your journey, how you ended up doing what you're doing now, and a little bit about maybe some of the plateaus that you've encountered along the way.
Well, sure, David. I've had a tremendous career, and I feel very fortunate for all of the experiences that I've had. I did start out right after college in a hands-on position in several restaurant companies, where I progressed rather quickly from being a management trainee to then training the managers that came into our division. And eventually my last corporate position was in working with a franchise organization and growing it to 110 locations. For that, I oversaw the training department, the operations on the day-to-day in the restaurants, as well as building a commissary and then doing a conversion of the concept. It was at that point where I realized that I kind of was at the end of really what I wanted to learn and do in that organization. I had taken on a tremendous load. I was working about 80 to 100 hours a week, and I just was not feeling very gratified at that point. And so my parents, both being entrepreneurs, I grew up seeing that, and I knew that at some point in my career, I wanted to start my own company. But I also wanted to go back to school to get a master's degree to just learn more and continue my learning in the business field. So I ended up doing both of those at the same time. And as you mentioned, I started Creative Restaurant Solutions in 1997 at the same time as getting my master's degree at Penn State. At that point, it was just myself, and I thought I was going to be a training and operations consultant where I would work with predominantly restaurant companies and help them refine training, write training, implement it, and make sure that their teams and their managers were productive and profitable, which is important to running a business. And it came to a point where one of my clients called me and said, "Hey, Maureen, you hire my managers and you train my managers. Now help me figure out why they're leaving, because their turnover was extremely high." And anybody who knows the restaurant industry knows that turnover is quite high. It's one of the highest out there. And so it came to the point where he was just so thrilled with the information I was able to gather for him conducting exit interviews. They internally were able to complete about 30%. When I took on doing them for them, I was able to complete about 70%. So they had a lot more information, a lot deeper information, more robust trends that they could then implement changes within the organization from. But he was so thrilled with what I was doing that he started talking to a whole bunch of other people in the Massachusetts Restaurant Association. And I found myself at a point where I had more work than I myself could do. I really couldn't take on anymore. And so I was at a crossroads as to whether do I continue to grow in this area? Do I stay with what I'm focusing on currently, which was the training and operations? Or do I make the decision to hire some people? And I took the road of hiring some new people, as scary as it was.
Yeah. So, you know, what you've described is actually really common. We have a lot of consultants in our audience, and many of them, as I mentioned in the introduction, many of them struggle with just trying to get enough consistent leads. You had the good fortune to be in a place where you did have enough leads for your consulting business. And I wondered if you could, reflecting on that, if there's anything in particular that you think was really a key to having enough new business coming in as a single person consultant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always firmly believed that it is about relationships and taking the time to hear what it is that my clients at the time, what were their needs and their wants. I'll be candid with you. When my client called and said, "Hey, can you conduct my exit interviews for me?" I had never had an exit interview before. And it wasn't at a time where the internet, you could just jump on Google and say, "What's an exit interview?" And so I put my brain to paper and said, "Here's what I think an organization would want to know." And then I collaborated with him to come up with what he felt were the right questions. And that was our starting point. And so I think the willingness to hear the client's concerns, being willing to not always take it in the direction that you think it's going to go in, but really the direction they think it should go in, is very, very helpful. And I have found that to be extremely helpful throughout the past almost 21 years of being in business.
Yeah, that's a really important point. So you're listening to what the client wants. Mm-hmm. You're responding to it, whether or not it's the direction that you thought you wanted to take your business in. And you are also listening for the opportunity to be of service to your client, whether or not you actually know the solution when you're essentially when you're selling the project.
Mm-hmm. And there are even often times where we'll get on the phone with a client and they tell us, "Hey, we'd like you to do a survey for us," whether it be an engagement survey or exit surveys. And in their mind, they already have their mind set on what the problems are. And we always coach them to keep an open mind because that may not be what the opportunity is. But then we get in there and we start digging with the surveys and the questions. And there are often times where clients are surprised because it's not not typically what it is that they suspected at first. And we always like that. Give them some different information in which they can help grow and develop their business.
Right. So by coaching them that what they're – and it must be an interesting and kind of delicate balance that you have to achieve in coaching them to be open to a problem that they may not be identifying.
We always have to give that coaching and always very respectfully and always providing them with the information that if you're going to ask a question on a survey, you have to be willing to do something about it with the results. And that probably is the harder of the conversations to have because oftentimes people want to ask about salary. Well, if you're not willing to do something about salary when the information comes back, then don't ask about salary. There are other ways that we can ascertain as to whether salary is an issue or not. So yes, you do have to, again, that's the relationship part, getting to know the client. How do they best respond to feedback? How will they react to your telling them that, for example, the information is coming back saying not what they thought it was going to say. And so it's all about reading people and getting to know who they are and what their hot points are.
Sounds good. Now, Maureen, you mentioned something else. When you were making a decision about hiring people, mm-hmm. It sounds like you were weighing the options for yourself about how to scale, given the fact that you had more than enough business coming in.
I had to make that decision because, again, it wasn't true to, I didn't intend to get into the survey business. I, again, left industry thinking I was going to take that knowledge and apply it across several different companies in the areas of training and operations, which is where I had excelled. And so all of a sudden here, I'm get really given this golden egg. And every year I call that client and tell him, thank you. I really think it's important that he know how much he helped me with that. Or I'll shoot an email or something. But I had to make that decision. And out of curiosity, I saw both my parents being entrepreneurs and they evolved over time and took on different projects. And so although it was uncomfortable and scary, I thought it was the right way to go because it did tie in. It wasn't totally disjointed from what I was currently doing, but it wasn't exactly what I was doing. And so out of curiosity, I said yes, and we figured it out together, which is a great way to do it with a client.
So now let's shift. Let's talk a little bit about what it is you do with the clients you serve and some of the plateaus that you help them overcome.
Sure. So as I mentioned, a lot of what we do are surveys for our clients, whether that be exit surveys, retention surveys, a pulse or location survey, as well as extensive engagement and satisfaction surveys. And by what we call getting the real scoop of what your team is thinking, you know, what's on their minds and what's in their hearts, where are their disconnects between your mission, values, and cultural statements compared to what's happening in the day-to-day. And we help them take those results and that data and assimilate it into recommendations of what they should do to help drive the business forward. So, for example, you know, we find in the exit surveys that we do that oftentimes it's not about money, but instead it's about poor relationships with supervisors, poor company culture, and or lack of development. And so we help organizations through our business experience and operational knowledge take that information of what their specific opportunities are and work towards improving their business. It is always customized and tailored to their needs. It's not cookie cutter, although some things as it relates to development can be cookie cutter. We all know what it takes to build relationships with supervisors. That also can be a little bit cookie cutter, but it's always done with their cultural values, mission, and philosophies in mind. Because what might fit in one company definitely would not fit in another company. So we're always taking that into consideration and giving them the data and the feedback so that they can then work on improving really the overall employment experience. How can you become a best place to work? How can you become an organization where people are excited to come to work every day and are working towards the mission and the values? That's what I'm lucky to do every day.
What's an example of a company that wasn't doing surveys before bringing your team on? And what happened as a result of the surveys that you helped them with?
Well, for example, the company that actually got us started in the exit interview surveys, they were experiencing management turnover of about 87%, which when you have turnover at that level, you can't really drive the business forward. You're always trying to play catch up. And after about a year and a half of doing the exit surveys, they identified, we always coach our clients, don't react to one individual survey. Instead, look at the trends from within. And by looking at the trends together as partners, we were able to identify the items that they should implement and change in the management roles so that the managers would come in and have a better experience, so that they would be better leaders and more effective leaders to their teams. And ultimately, their guests benefited from that because the managers were happier and the team members were happier, and they saw improvement in their guest satisfaction scores. So after about a year and a half, we were able to take their turnover from 87% to 28%, which gives them the ability to develop and grow the management team versus constantly having to replace them.
Right. And what would you estimate the impact was on the bottom line? Were you able to get some sense of that? Because I know you're talking about you're talking about metrics that may or may not be directly quantifiable in terms of the bottom mm-hmm. line, but mm-hmm. there, but there's probably some sense of what that might be.
Well, studies in the hospitality industry show that to replace a manager, it costs about $30,000. So we're not talking pennies. We're talking some significant money.
Right. And I would also imagine that having a significantly smaller turnover also improves business in general.
Absolutely. As I mentioned, you know, your guest ends up getting a better experience, and whether it's a guest or a customer, depending upon the business that you're in, when you have a stable leadership team, they're able to do more. They can drive the business forward. They can take the time to really dig into their own P&L and their own profitability and make more of a difference there versus having a new manager in place every 6 to 9 months. With that, you're just constantly on a treadmill trying to play catch up.
Yeah, most definitely. So, Maureen, a year and a half project is, or a year and a half timeline to see the kind of results that you've just described in this one example, is a big chunk of time. And it might be, if an organization has never done the kind of surveying that you've just described, it might seem a little daunting to try to take on a project like this. Is there a way that somebody can test the waters and get a sense or maybe some initial results that might be helpful in understanding how beneficial these kinds of surveys can be?
Absolutely. So the types of surveys that I was discussing were the exit surveys. We have another type of survey that we call a pulse survey or a staff scan survey. So for an organization that's looking for quick results or quick information, we can drop a survey into a location and assess the culture, the environment, tools and resources, as well as the management team and how effective they are in driving the business forward and creating a cohesive team. And once we put that into a location, results are pretty quickly turned around, and we provide coaching to the management team of that location to help them interpret the results, because oftentimes that's where perhaps a disconnect because of lack of knowledge occurs. So we don't want to just throw the results out to a client, but instead we spend time with them and talk through the results and help them create an action plan to drive the business forward. And the time for a survey like that is approximately 10 to 15 business days from start to finish. So as you can see, you can get some quick results turned around. Then it's up to the management team to actually take the action plan and put it into play. And oftentimes our clients will have us repeat the pulse survey over time so that they can see progress.
It sounds like a great tool.
So yeah, it's very quick, very easy to implement, which is why people like it.
Great. So Maureen, you have had a robust career where you have worked your way up the ladder inside an organization, and you also have very successfully grown your own service business. I wondered if you could think about how you might describe a small number of action steps that have been most pivotal in your own career. And as you're thinking about that, this is our bonus question, and we're actually going to post the answer to this question inside our Facebook group. So I'm going to ask you to hold the answer for that right now. But going back to your career, I wonder if you can identify some ways that you have been helped along the way.
Oh, absolutely, because I definitely did not do this all by myself. I was very fortunate along my entire career, and even including this time, the 21 years that I've been running my own company, that I have had what I call my cheerleaders in my corner. So whether it be a boss who firmly believed in me in taking on a role that I felt was way out of my league, was too big of a stretch, but because of the belief that this boss had in me, I decided to go for it because I knew that I would have his support. And it was from taking on that role that I really feel I can do what I do today. So between having mentors and having bosses, hugely important. as I started my company and started adding people to my team, I then formed an informal board of directors. And I took a look at myself and where my strengths were and where my opportunities were. And I invited three people, one from a finance background, one from an HR background, and one from a marketing background, to be my sounding board. And most of the positions were unpaid. These people were willing to come along on the journey with me. They were excited to do it. And they, of course, wanted to see me succeed because most of them had known me for quite some time. And through that informal board, I was able to really challenge the direction that I was headed, you know, how fast my company grew, both from a team perspective and a sales perspective. And so every month we had a board meeting and we would talk about the issues that I was facing. We would set goals. They would hold me accountable to the goals, sometimes to my chagrin, actually. But, you know, it was good to have them in place for that. And I've continued that board type focus. Even now, 21 years later, I am a member of the alternative board, where I have seven peers and myself. We are all in different types of businesses, but yet we get together once a month and we coach each other. We give feedback to each other. We bring problems to the table that we're facing and help each other figure them out. And that also has been hugely helpful to my success.
When you first set up your advisory board, what was going through your head?
What was going through my head was, again, I was at a point where I had about four or five people on the team, and we had these client advocates out there who were very thrilled with what they were seeing and what the information they were receiving, and we were facing significant growth. And I really just always wanted to make sure that I approached that growth in an appropriate manner and didn't take on more than we could chew, because client satisfaction is extremely important to us. And so I really wanted the help with figuring out the right way to grow, how quickly, how to do it, whether it be through financing, whether it be through loans, whether it just be through my own bootstraps. And they were really able to help me figure out how to do that. Additionally, in 2008, we were facing, in the restaurant industry, economic cutbacks. I mean, it was every day the phone would ring, and I really just wanted to stop answering the phone because budget cuts were happening all over the place with the economy really going downhill. And so I knew that I had to diversify. And these three folks that were on my advisory board all came from different industries. And so through their coaching and guidance, I was able to start a second company. And now we work in other industries like banking and casinos and barbershop companies, just all sorts of different industries now, very, very diverse, which came from their coaching and their guidance.
Right. And I think it's important for people to hear that that it is possible to get the kind of help that you've just described without, because it sounds like without investing a lot of money. Yet you, I suspect, also needed to be quite open with them and make yourself vulnerable at the same time.
I think vulnerability is probably the most important part as a leader, to be able to say, I don't know how to do this, or I don't know that I made the right decision. And you really, like you said, David, you have to be raw. You have to put it all out there so that they get the full picture. And as I mentioned earlier, people are willing to do it and willing to give you that advice for free. I mean, who are the people that you admire in the business world or whatever industry that you're in? And reach out to them. It's very common that people want to give back in some way. And this is a great way for them to give back, is through being an advisor to somebody else who's just starting out or who's on the cusp of growing. It's an honor. I do it now myself, where I help other people start businesses, and I don't expect to be paid, and I do it because I like to see people succeed.
So speaking of people succeeding, whom do you know personally who has done a remarkable job of smashing the plateau?
You know, David, I love that question when you posed it to me, and I struggled with it a little bit, in all candidness, because I took the word personally very seriously. And I do quite a bit of work in the nonprofit world and happened to be sitting last week at our final board meeting of the year as we were determining where our funds would go for the year. And one of the gentlemen that sits on our board is also the executive chair or executive director of an organization based out of Boston. And I think he's just doing such a phenomenal job growing in different cities, realizing where he needs help, bringing people on board for that help slash advice. And I really think that he is a world and game changer. So that was one person that came to mind. His name is Seth Rosenzweig. And another person that comes to mind and who is a mentor to me in the philanthropic space is Lori Franz. And Lori, she's changing the world. And I look to her, I really look up to her, even though we're about the same age. I really think that she is just blowing the roof off of what this world will look like, what philanthropy will look like. And I hope someday when I grow up that I am able to emulate it like she does, because she's pretty amazing.
Wow, great examples. And Maureen, what can we look forward to in the near future from you?
Well, both the CRS companies have a lot going on. We have just added 4 new people to our team, which means we grew out of our office space. So we are under construction now to move into some new office space, which is very, very exciting. The new digs will be available in around February or so. So with the growth of the new team, we are also looking to expand into new industries. Now, we've already started that journey, but we know that there are lots of other industries out there that have people who need development and organizations whose cultures perhaps need to grow or evolve. So we're looking forward to that and to learning about other industries. And then we're also looking to expand the types of surveys that we offer. We kind of have become known as an exit interview company, whereas we offer so many other different types of surveys. And it's an honor to us when a client will call us and say, hey, I have a problem. How can you help me figure this out? That to us tells us that we really have become a true partner to that client. And that is always our goal. And then finally, we were lucky to be recipients of the Philly 100 Award for the past 2 years. And we're hoping for next year that we have a hat trick coming out. So we're going for number 3.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And Maureen, how can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
They can go online to www.consultcrs.com. They can also find us at ConsultCRS on Twitter. And they can also find us on Facebook at ConsultCRS.
Maureen, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a great discussion about your own career and some of the ways that you help the companies you serve. My guest today has been Maureen Rukin-Bales, President of Creative Restaurant Solutions and Combined Resource Solutions. Thank you again, Maureen, for joining us.
Thank you so much, David.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau. I hope you enjoyed our discussion today. To get Maureen's answer to my bonus question, join our free Smashing the Plateau community on Facebook, where all the practical tips that our guests share on the show will be there waiting for you to sift through and implement in your own business. Our community helps you uncover things like how to generate leads, how to scale your business by hiring the right talent, and how to step out of your comfort zone to leverage new tools like podcasts, video, and social media to fill your pipeline. Go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook to join. That's smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook. We want you to smash the plateau in business, work, and in life.